Good evening. This is the class, The Hidden Work, and we are endeavoring to study the volume written by E.J. Gold called The Hidden Work. It's one of a number of books that we've studied at this time slot. We're at the very end of that book. We're on chapter 13. The Hidden Work is an important vehicle for anybody that would like to study more about let's just say operating more in the spiritual, which we'll get into a lot more in the weeks to come. The next book we're going to do is the American Book of the Dead. We'll probably do that in about a month or two. And so if you don't have a copy of that and you'd like to participate, then you can write into gatewaysbookshapes.com, order that book, and it's going to be a full-fledged study, not just of the book, but of the principles that are coming forth in the book of the ABD. We're going to be studying a lot of the front material. We're going to be addressing issues of what does it mean, the general issues that are talked to out there about, like, how do we approach our death? What does it mean to prepare for death? We're going to unpack some of those a bit. And what I'm going to do is, and this is very difficult, it's beyond, I'm not sure if I know how to do it, but I'm going to attempt to, because that's all you get, is we're going to weave some of the 49 chambers into that broad discussion, the sense of what are those 49 chambers, and is this something that I can have a sensation of now in this life while I'm alive, while the body is still operating? The answer to that is yes, and I think that I'll be able to demonstrate that to you during that course, but that'll be a while before we get into that. It'll be a very dynamic course. It's going to be very thick, but we'll focus, our focal point will be the American Book of the Dead. There will not be a Labyrinth Reader's course. That is being done by others. I've talked to Pat Elizabeth, who has her own course, the LRS course, and she's agreed that she would like me to do this book. She and I have been talking about this for about 10 years now, that at some point I should actually pick the book up and read it, I guess.
Really?
But I'll have to do that together with everybody here. And part of the purpose of this course, part of what we're doing is we're gathering together as a group. We gather together as a group, note the space, okay? We gather together as a group because when we focus our attention with a common intent, when we focus our attention with a common intent, we're able to create an invocation. When we are in the space called the invocation, it's the essential self that is learning how to be bathed in that vibratory sensation. And as that vibratory sensation becomes more readily available to us, and what I say is when we can recognize it more, just a simple recognition. When we can recognize it, then we're able to access it more, and that's part of our job here together. So we're going to have three segments in the class, maybe only two. The first segment actually is, do you have questions about the last six or seven classes on chapter 13?
Mm-hmm.
The chapter is called Thought for Food, and Ivan, why don't you read the header on chapter 13 to give context, but we'll unpack that a little bit too. So is there anybody on the phone other than you, George?
Simon's on the phone.
I am here.
Simon, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Good to see you. Good evening, and Ivan too.
Thank you so much, and I'm glad. Thank you for being here. And I want to have a very dynamic...
I'm on the phone.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Gary.
Hey, Susan.
So the first part is, do you have questions about a great deal of material that was shared in the last 6 weeks about food and the invocational space that we're in. Don't forget, the core of the book, The Hidden Work, is the prayer absolute. And now Ivan's going to go ahead and read the header and maybe even the first paragraph. But let's see what it feels like to read the header.
On thought for food?
Yeah.
As we take food up into our personal cosmos, it awakens to our own extent of consciousness. What we eat becomes part of us and partakes of our own degree of consciousness.
Yeah, I hear that, and it's mind-blowing, really, when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the time what we do is not think about it. And when I use the word not think about it, what I mean is we generally do not pay attention. We don't pay attention to a lot of things. That's okay. That's just part of our term of service on the planet Earth, is that we are basically, we are asleep much of the time. And we have a chance to wake up when we can inject into different areas, Ivan. We can inject these, I call them inner reminding factors. The term reminding factor gets overused, and but it's still a comfortable term for me. And when I have a reminding factor in my food suddenly, that's a good thing. So we've covered various ways of operating with food. And so I have a question. What are your questions about that? Do you have questions? Have you experimented with that? Have you worked with it during the last 5 or 6 weeks, longer? What are your thoughts? And can you formulate a question? And are they, so, Simon, if there are questions that come up, just break in, okay?
Okay, I do have a question, though.
Excellent.
Remember the question that I posed you like at one reunion or two reunions before, that we said that we were going to talk about that question. I don't know if it ever was addressed, but it was regarding that the person that do the act of cooking with love and with dedication,
yes,
and with the best intentions, but they are not really present. We talk about this question at the end very briefly, but you said you were going to address that situation.
Okay, good. Let's address it. That's a primary question in the concept of this particular chapter, Thought for Food. In this chapter, we are addressing the issues that come about with food and being on the path. I was years and years ago, oddly enough, I was a young man. That's part of what happened earlier.
Hard to believe, but
take it on faith, yeah. Okay, as I've been saying. And I was up in the Red Feather Lakes above Denver for a 3-day meditation, whatever it's called. It was a 3-day meditation something. And most of the time we were meditating. Oddly enough.
Did you spend that time alone or with other
no,
people?
No, it was a whole group of people, and you had these very big tents set up, and you'd meditate together, and there'd be some talks, but it was primarily meditation because we had been in another session the week before. But anyway, so we're up there. I'm starting to answer your question, Simon.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, you had to volunteer to work at one of the many jobs that sprung up around having all these people. There was, you know, maybe 50 of us there, something like that. And I volunteered to do the kitchen, to work in the kitchen. So anyway, so I'm working in the kitchen, and there, this is a kitchen that's preparing food for about 100 people. So it's a complex organization. But what I noticed as the, I was there for about 4 hours. As it turned out, during the three-day stint, I actually got 2 sessions in the kitchen because I asked for it. But anyway, the leader of the kitchen was a guy, and he was meticulous. He was aware of everything that was going on in the kitchen during the entire preparatory stage of this meal. Huge pots, right? And other individuals were manning those stations. But the place was spotless. Anything came up, and this was during prep, but he conducted this like a sergeant on the battlefield. Everybody's attention was on one thing and one thing only, which is preparing the food in a proper manner. He didn't allow anybody's attention to waver. And so there was this an enormous amount of energy, but the energy was well tuned. It wasn't, and I've worked in kitchens before at restaurants, and I don't know if anybody's ever worked as a short order cook. Did you ever have that job?
Not as such. I mean, I actually worked at for the Institute at Kung Fu Restaurant, but that was a lot different than...
You were young then, too.
Yeah, I was young then, too, but that's a lot different than...
Than what we're talking
Charlie's
about.
Charlie's Angels Cafe.
Yeah, and if you go to a short order thing, it is it's controlled chaos. It's not focused attention. Now, so I'm there. I'm in the kitchen, and I'm kind of like taking my time because I really wanted to observe this whole process that was going on. And so I stayed a little bit extra after my shift was over because I volunteered to sweep the floor or clean the floor. So meal's over, it had been served, and this lady comes in. She was with the next group. Pir Vilayat Khan was coming in with like 300 people the following week. They were going to arrive Sunday afternoon, and she was going to cook. And now, it was curious because suddenly there's a break in the action in the kitchen. It was quiet. I was it would have been inappropriate to say I was a fly on the wall, but I was. I was just very quiet doing my job because I wanted to watch how these masters of the kitchen operated. But she comes in, and there's this big counter. It was clean. It was meticulous. And she rolls out her knives. And these knives were beautiful, is all I can say. They were just they were meticulous. And she looked at the other guy, and he was, because they were like talking about what she needed and so on, and he says, well, are you going to be cooking meat? And she says, no, this is all vegetarian. And then she points to her knives and she says, these knives have never touched meat. Okay? So for her, Simon, this individual, it was never an issue. It was so important for her to vibrationally never use that knife to cut into animal flesh. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, imagine somebody that is actually practicing what we're talking about here in Chapter 13, actually practicing these ideas about how food interacts with our body. And at some point, they go from no sensitivity to it to a little bit more sensitivity, right? They're a little more sensitive. Like, for instance, I don't know if you've ever been to New York, but if you go to New York, there's food hawkers on the street all over the place. You can stop and get a hot dog, right? And there's the old joke, of course, about the monk who goes up to the hot dog vendor and he says to the vendor, he says, make me one with everything. Takes a minute. And, like, you might feel fine about buying a hot dog from that guy. Or you might not. Or if you go to a fine restaurant, there's one in town in the New Moon Cafe, you can see into the kitchen. The kitchen is run meticulously. But as your sensitivity to food and how it affects your body goes up, then you require more, which means you require those handling your food to be more meticulous in their inner state. Because the inner state, what are we talking about here? What is a well-made vegetable dish other than a particularly well-prepared form of energy? Right?
Okay.
That it's a form of energy that we're going to take into our body. And don't we want that energy to supplement us and not degrade us? We want the food to be elevated. So if an individual comes to the preparation process, they come to it, it's a form of prayer. The form of prayer that they bring to it. One quick second. And that prayer is therefore reflected in the food. If that is an issue for you, you will know when your cook has been weeping. And you will know when your cook has been in focused attention in the act of prayer called food preparation. Simon, are we close to what you were, some of the material that you wanted to cover on that question?
Yeah. So it's in the way. Because I was thinking, too, that, for instance, in the Jewish tradition, you do have that practice, too. You know, that like in the knife that never touched meat. So they used two utensils and kitchens and all the facilities that has to be kosher, too. But my point is, what is the how the degree of presence affects all these, fair enough, you know, care and good intentions, but I don't know what the degree of attention is, what the level of presence, and so on and so on.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing because you talk about a kosher kitchen. In the Hasidic tradition, the one thing I love about that tradition, and in the same way about the Jewish tradition in general, if I'm a Hasidic Jew living in Grass Valley, California, which there aren't any, but if I'm a Hasidic Jew living in New York and I travel to Paris, I am confident that the dietary mechanism is precisely the same as it was in my home that I left in New York City, because they are following the same thing. Now you ask about, well, how does presence come into this? What is the inducer of presence? Well, when we talked about the first three parts of the prayer absolute, it was bringing the physical, the emotional, and the mental together into harmony. Mm-hmm. And then presence comes forward, which means the essential self is more alive at that time. Now, if the cook has their attention on the food preparation, and they are in a form of humbly with heart alive, and they have a clarity about what they're doing in their work there, then presence is there. And the food is then allowed to be elevated to that vibratory sensation, Simon, to the next level. And the recipients, they get the Eucharist host of food transformed that is then taken into the individual.
I do have a comment.
Hold that for 1 second, because Tamara had a quick question. You'll have to repeat the question.
Tamara is bringing up, referring people to Babette's Feast, the film.
It's a film that
depicts. The film portrays a meal, a preparation of a communal meal that transforms the people and brings them to prayer.
So that's what we're talking about here is, can we in our food preparation influence the recipient? The answer is yes, and that's something called the invocational dinner, which we've talked about extensively. And Susan, you say there's a comment?
No, I have a comment.
Okay.
I recall one evening, we had stopped at a restaurant. And it was 9 o'clock, so it was pushing it.
We can't hear you very well.
So it was like 9 o'clock in the evening, and we went in and we said, "Are you still serving?" And the people all said, "No. Yeah, we can seat you." And we realized that if we stayed, their hearts weren't into it. We would have gotten some food, but it wouldn't have been loving and nourishing. Mm-hmm. So we left.
I was traveling. I was in Sausalito. There was a small group of us. EJ was there. And at the time, this was many, many years ago, he was eating out. And we went to this seafood restaurant that he was aware of, and he wanted to take us there. Well, we got there about 3 in the afternoon, and so the restaurant was empty. And the maitre d' set us in a nice table, and we were sitting there. And we were there for quite a while, and the waiter hadn't come to take our order, our drink order, or anything like that. And one of us, you know, started getting nervous and, of course, wanted to get him moving along and says, "Well, I'm going to go find the waiter and get him to wait on us." And EJ said, "No, don't. Just wait." And we waited and we waited and waited. Finally, on their own accord, the waiter came and took our order, and everything was fine. And when I thought about that later, I realized that if we had gone and invoked the waiter, it would have started from a point of guilt, that the waiter would have been in guilt. That would have been what would have been in our food. Similar to what Susan is talking about, this late night restaurant that she went to. And then there's a comment to read.
I got one comment that said Pianjo. That is an addendum. Since Pianjo says addendum, I forgot to mention that our invocational dinner observed all EJ's dietary restraints and suggestions, as well as guarding against negative energies. We sense that this was very helpful.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did anybody else have a question about the material over the last few weeks? Has anybody been working with the material over the last few weeks? Go ahead, Susan.
Well, I know I have the contamination talk. Is there a talk that goes over the diet?
Ivan?
Yes, there's a diet talk also.
Is there a diet talk?
And I'm trying to remember which book.
Isn't it
I think
something on mayonnaise? Or?
Yeah, is there life
is there
after
mayonnaise?
Is there life
that's
after
the
mayonnaise?
Subtitle is in the Talk of the Month series. But I believe there's also a version of that as a chapter in, it may be in Seven Bodies of Man. Anyway, I'll have to check into that. Here's the thing to keep in mind, you know, reading those talks, is that they're a snapshot, you know, the commentary, let's say, the significance of the talk that E.J. gives, you know, holds up indefinitely, I would say. But, you know, there are... There are some of the guidelines, you know, even that Piaggio may have been referring to there, have changed from time to time, you know, changed over the years. In other words, E.J. personally has gone through, you know, he's gone through years of being very strictly vegetarian, you know, of not eating any meat at all or fish. And then, you know, he's altered that diet, you know, for his own nutritional well-being. Whatever reason, you know, just consulting with doctors, you know, he's gone back to eating fish and chicken, for example. And so I'm trying to think of what some of the guidelines are in that talk. It would require going over it, you know, in quite a bit of detail. But, I mean, there, as I recall, in that diet talk, you know, there are a number of things that are singled out because of toxic issues of poisons, literally, like the fact that bananas, you know, are treated with sulfur, and apples, the typical apple orchard may treat apples a certain way, and you know, all of that was written. Those Talk of the Months date from the 80s, from the mid 80s, and up to the early 90s, and you know, there was not such a widespread availability of organic produce, for example, at the time. So some of those things may not be exactly the same, you know, in this time frame. On the other hand, the principles, some of the alchemical principles would certainly hold up, you know, the issues about that we don't eat onions and garlic here, and the, you know, that there are foods and spices, for that matter, that are very counterproductive for invocational work. In other words, he talks about, in the same talk, he talks about foods that are counterproductive for your digestion, like cooked tomatoes, you know, tomato sauce, pizza, spaghetti, and so on. You know, it's basically, it's very, all of the diets that we've ever talked about around here are very adamant about the high acidity of cooked tomatoes. And I think that maybe some people can tolerate it better than others. And, you know, that has to do maybe somewhat with say alchemical work or with invocational work, but it's just not very healthy. But, you know, then the issues like the use of certain spices, you know, the garlic, not using garlic and onions, you know, as a garnish, as for spicing, a lot of those things are specifically have to do with not health issues, because there are lots of people who recommend eating tons of garlic and tons of, actually my father learned from his father, from my grandfather, that you could avoid the common cold by eating onions every day, and I believe my father ate onions every day of his life, and it worked. He got other illnesses, you know, he wasn't always entirely well, but I don't believe I ever remember him getting a cough or a cold, and because it does work. But, you know, for the EJ has, so the EJ's diet is is geared to some of the principles, you know, don't necessarily have to do with the most nutritional or the most antibacterial or antiviral elements of the diet. They have to do with what is conducive or not conducive to invocational spaces.
So I think there are some other comments now, Simon. Thank you, Ivan.
David, I have a comment, if I might.
Please.
I have a comment, if I might.
Please.
I think I've got to make sure I got the sound off. A week or 2 weeks after our invocational dinner, Valerie and I hosted two friends of ours, professional people from San Antonio. One's a professor at the medical school. They came to visit us, and this couple have never had any interest in anything spiritual, to our knowledge. And Valerie decided on her own initiative, when she prepared food, to make it an invocational dinner, and suggested that we use the Great Invocation to say grace. It had a profound effect on the lady, and it completely changed the dynamic of what we normally talk about in the evening. And I think we had more in-depth bonding with these people as human beings as a result of that. And I was very impressed with how well it worked, because I didn't know she had planned this, but it was obvious during the dinner that something was afoot.
This brings up a broader topic. I'm just going to comment it on it briefly, but it's one that Silverdale and I have talked about from time to time, is that part of what we are doing is to help other individuals get over certain hurdles that are out there. Part of the time we want to say, we just want to appease them and do whatever is going to help them like us more. But that's our principle, not to cause waves. But sometimes it's important to be bold. And when you're bold, like Valerie was, she may have affected that woman in such a way that it'll change that entire family structure. I don't know if they have kids or not, but...
No, they don't.
You know, but there'll be some element now that is there that wasn't there before.
Very definitely.
There's an element there that wasn't there before. And it came about through using technique that Valerie understood, that Piangio understands, and then they acted on it on behalf of others. Okay. Other comments to read?
Yes, I got some comments here. Hog Lady says, I think blessing the food before eating is a great help, especially when eating out.
Especially when eating out, is what I think I heard him say.
Yeah, especially when eating out, Mark Roach brings another great point, is, and paying some attention to the history of the food, where it came from, the work put into it.
So paying attention to the history of the food, where it came from, and to understand that. And allowing yourself, this is another form of attention, allowing yourself to be aware of that. This is a scary one, because you go to eat somewhere, and if you actually focus on where did that food come from, you might get up and walk out.
It continues, Mark. Mark says, no particular results that I am aware of other than that it slows me down and makes me calmer and more conscious. Although, and no idea if it is related, but even in the face of massive overwhelm, have been much more focused and productive. Hawk Lady continues, yes, Mark, that is so true. Before, I would only thank Mother Earth, but now I thank the pickers who pick the veggies, the delivery people, etc. This is all new to me, but I enjoy thinking about where it came from, as you say, history of the food. And I got something from Mark Roach. I hope he's asking me, as much, let me see. Mark Roach says, as much as possible, I have worked at being more devotional while preparing food at home and more consciously aware while eating. I hope, Mark, that is what you are referring to in your question.
It is.
That's it.
As you continue to work in this particular area and you begin to introduce the concept of the invocational meal, the invocational dinner, the invocational process into the food process, what will happen is your kitchen will start to become sacred. And you'll notice that you don't want just anybody walking into your kitchen all of a sudden. I went to a friend's house. I was up in Seattle and was at a friend's house, and she doesn't understand this whole idea of invocation of food and contamination and all that. So I'm over her house, and she has a young friend come over that she's kind of mentoring. This young girl's, I don't know, 12 or something like that. And they're very close friends, and the woman doesn't have children, but she's a good mentor for this young lady. So we're over there, and so we're in the kitchen. The conversation moves into the kitchen, and then the young girl, like, boosts herself up on the counter and sits on the counter. It's kind of a normal thing to do, right? Mm-hmm. Just hanging out in the kitchen. So I watched this, and I knew where I was at. And because no one would ever do that in my kitchen. But in this kitchen, it was just second nature for someone to sit down on the food prep counter. So you begin introducing it, and you'll begin to get a sense of whether it becomes important in that to you or not, even if you, like Hawk Lady said last time she was here, about how you select the food when you go out to buy your groceries for the meal preparation. What you're going to find out is that gradually you'll start to depend on yourself more for food preparation.
Okay. Yeah, it has to do with, Dan is saying, it has to do with separating the fine from the coarse. And you want to keep what's coarse out of the kitchen and encourage what's fine. That's the upscaling or something. It's filtering. That's what I was talking about. EJ writing about alchemical principles regarding food, because this is what, to carry out an alchemical process, you have to protect, you have to encapsulate, and actually, in a sense, draw a circle around the space. And this is what the kitchen is like. Actually, this is reminding me that, you know, going back to my past food experience, the Kung Fu restaurant, which EJ started in Blue Jay, California, which was a neighboring community to Crestline and Lake Arrowhead. He basically bought this restaurant. Well, you know, he actually just rented a space and started from scratch, set up the restaurant with equipment and so on, and then after several years, when the Institute was finished with it, actually somebody else bought it and, of course, transformed it into a different, you know, a lower kind of restaurant. But when I was assigned to work in this restaurant, I thought of it as a chore, you know, like it was a duty, an obligation, you know, that I was willing to do this to help support the community and so on. But it became, I went through, like, actually a kind of magical period there because it was the, you know, the, the opportunity, you know, it became to me much more like a privilege because it was a public interface. You know, it was a restaurant, a public restaurant that passed all the health inspections and everything else that it needed to, you know, that was being run by a spiritual community, by a school, an institute. And EJ set it up on his principles and he helped design the menu and the decor and the whole thing. And it was called Kung Fu Restaurant. It was on the martial arts theme. We dressed in, the people who worked there dressed in karate gis. We dressed in these white karate gis. And it was like the principle you were saying at the New Moon restaurant. Everything we did, there was just a counter that people could sit at, and there were a few tables in the restaurant. And then we worked on a counter. And there was a couple of small refrigerators. There were kind of hot plates, and there was, we didn't use microwaves, but there was a, we used a toaster oven and hot plates, basically, to do all the cooking. And, you know, and that was it. And we had counters, and we used, you know, big, not, you know, sharp cutting knives. And the thing I was going to get into is that the when it was working well, I wouldn't say that every day was as good as every other day in the Institute's restaurant, but the fact is that it was a tremendous opportunity, you know, to practice attention and presence. And that, you know, what we noticed there is that, you know, we would work there sometimes a crew of two, sometimes like on this big, like July 4th weekend, like it just happened here in our area. You know, we might need five or six or seven people to work this tiny little restaurant because we'd have this constant influx of people. But the we were working with organic produce, and we were using like Altadena products from this particular dairy in Southern California. And we literally would close the restaurant one day a week, go down in a big old broken down truck, go all the way down to this depot in Compton or somewhere, you know, somewhere down near the docks or something in LA, and because it was the only organic produce distribution place in the whole area, in the whole LA area. So but we literally did, we knew, you know, we bought and delivered our produce and we got the dairy products delivered and all that. It was a very high quality of food, and then they were putting a special kind of attention into the preparation. And what we noticed was there are people who were regular customers. There were people who would come back over and over again, and they would sit there, and they would just kind of bask in the vibrations. You know, there are other people who came because it was health food, and we actually would juice, you know, we would do carrot juices and all these vegetable juices for people. Some of them were prescribed by doctors, but there were small groups of people who would come to just to sit there and have lunch or dinner together, and, you know, they were feeling the vibrations, you know, of the school, of the Institute, and it was coming through the food, basically, and it was very
so
interesting to, because it's sort of like, you know, it might be hit or miss, let's say, if you do this at home. If you're working in this restaurant for weeks at a time, it's like you actually can see when you're hitting, when you're hitting and when you're missing, because you see people's reactions to the food.
It's a way of service. It's a way of service that you can take on in your personal home or when you do, like Valerie did, for another couple that came to eat.
Mm-hmm.
As this becomes part of your work, and that's what I was asking, is that is this becoming part of anybody's work, a whole difference of food? As it becomes part of your work then, and someone comes over to have a meal with you, you're suddenly it puts you in a position that you hadn't been in before. You're just not making grub for them. It's suddenly an event, and you put in a certain kind of effort to fulfill that event. Mark, if you go ahead, post those comments on the website too. Those are very, very useful. Go ahead, Susan.
Well, I recall maybe 5 months ago we were talking about.
Can't hear you.
5 or 6 months ago, we were talking about the cleaning of the space and how to hold the right invocation as you prepare. You know, and that also goes along with our one of our recent exercises of doing the Karma Yoga Day.
Right.
You know, and doing working for the benefits of others. So it seems like it's all everything's coming and all of our skills are coming down to where they're useful.
Yeah. Hold the phone closer as you talk. At the end there, it started to fade.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Focus on that.
Okay.
Then we can hear you when you do that. That's good. Thank you. And so all of these, so several of these traits are coming to bear, and are we're able to put them to practice.
Right.
And go ahead. There are more comments, Simon.
Okay. Mark Rhodes says, interesting you say that, David, to some comment you did previously. I found myself sort of out of left field yesterday and today during our long recitations of a Hindu scripture.
Long what?
Recitations.
Recitations of the scripture.
Recitations of Hindu scripture.
Oh, Hindu scripture. Okay.
Yeah. So here comes a statement. He says, yes, making the kitchen more sacred seems to be the name of the game.
Yes.
Found doing so very nurturing. Again, Iru, we got a person here called Iru. It says, have you talked about no gossiping, etc., in the kitchen, as well as no idle chatter in the kitchen affects
Oh, idle. Idle chatter. Talk about no. What was the first one? No. Gossiping, yeah, right.
Gossiping.
It's the same thing. You know, it's the same thing that we're talking about. Is this? These are negative emotions. And if you're gossiping in the kitchen, you are invoking that into the potato
mm-hmm.
you're making.
Yeah.
As simple as that. It's simple, but very difficult. It's too simple for the human mind.
Mm.
Okay?
And Mark Roach expands in that it says, Mark, and it seems like doing it in the kitchen, especially since the food becomes ourselves, then generalize that attitude to the rest of our lives. On a certain level, we are always
yes.
preparing food.
Yes.
You're, in a sense, throwing down a gauntlet, and the gauntlet is a challenge to the sleeping machine. And if you hold your posture, it'll seep into every part of your life. It'll change everything that is. As William Blake said, if a fool would but persist in his foolishness,
mm-hmm.
he would become wise.
Right.
So anything you do with excellence will slide into all parts of your life.
Yeah, this is what you're saying here. Several of these comments are reminding me now that, you know, it may be, this is the sort of the alchemical process or the prayer absolute approach, let's say, to having an invocational space is you go through certain steps. You do the
Good.
Cleansing, you know, you do the cleansing and
banishing?
Banishing, yeah, banishing. You know, you specifically, let's say in a magical sense, you banish the negative from the space and then you are able to bring forth, to raise vibrations and bring forth something that's much higher in vibration. But it may also be, I think that I've occasionally come in contact with individuals, let's say like the Tibetan monks who do this sand painting. You know, they do a sand painting mandala. You know, I think that there may be processes or techniques of prayer where the invocation is that's created is so powerful that then it carries out the banishing and the cleansing. And what I'm thinking of, and I may have brought this up once before, weeks and weeks ago in this class, or maybe it was discussing another book, but I remember once on the floor of the trade show, the book trade show, you know, the book expo, which at the time
I did bring it up,
either in New York or in Chicago. I mean, I came upon these monks. A publisher that was publishing Tibetan Buddhist books had sponsored monks to come into the middle of a huge trade show and do a sand mandala.
Yeah.
And there was an utterly remarkable thing going on there where people were standing around. It was like a radius, and you could feel. I mean, I came and approached them to look and see them doing the sand mandala, and it was like it muffled the sound. I mean, it was like all of this chaotic, you know, random vibration and everything. It was just like they were so concentrated. You know, they were so focused on doing this mandala. It was just like this vibration was coming off of them. And it was a capsule.
They were
like a little
emanating
capsule.
That energy,
yeah.
Ivan.
So this capsule space was in the middle of a very chaotic trade show.
It's not something like super esoteric and unknowable.
Mm-hmm.
No. The power of their attention, which took them many years to do.
Yeah, that's right. That's it.
That's the mystery.
Yeah.
Is the great amount of effort that they put into it that created the emanation that created the silence, in a sense, in that space.
Yeah, it was very noticeable. I mean,
it was very
palpable,
yeah.
Yeah, and then the other thing that's noticeable is lots and lots of people were just passing by, very little curiosity, like, oh, that's what's that? Don't know. Something odd.
And many of the times that we're doing the service work we're doing, some people just won't get it.
Yeah,
simple as that.
And other people were magnetized right away.
Other
people
need to see that. A very good example, Ivan. How are we doing in comments?
There seems to be a conversation there between Mark Roach and Warmger. I don't know. I will wait until some clarification in the comments. So far, that's what we got.
Okay. The next topic I wanted to bring up, we're going to have another class on this chapter. But I want to introduce a topic. And the topic, in a sense, hold that thought.
Hold the thought that there's another topic?
Yeah, because I want to complete something that I thought of when I was listening to bouncing off this comment about gossip and idle talk within the space. Okay, I wanted to bounce off that. In a sense, you know, we can say that the person is monks and stuff like that, they didn't do any banishing or things like that. Yeah, they did. Because it's seamless to them that they know how to enter that space without a external ritual. Mm-hmm. They don't have a requirement to do that.
Right.
Now, we talked briefly about the Catholic Mass, and we indicated that in the Catholic Mass, what occurs is that the mass goes along, and about two-thirds or more of the way through it, this process of the Eucharist, the blessing of the Eucharist happens, right? There's the creation of the host, and that host then goes to the Eucharist prayer that the priest provides, and there's the transubstantiation. Remember we talked about that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that means that thing called a wheat wafer. It's changed. It's no longer that. It's actually the body of Christ and the blood of Christ. So when the cook comes into the invocational kitchen, the cook is beginning to put to the beginning the process of the ritual mass. And the mass continues until the food is complete. And in the blessing that they bring with their high attention and their high presence and their devotion to the particular job creates the potential, the possibility of transubstantiation of that food. Okay. We are priests and nuns performing and celebrating the Mass when we enter our kitchen for our fellow recipients, really. So, that's all I had on that. And I'm going to introduce the topic. And Silverdale, do you think you're going to be able to be around next week as well?
Yes, I will.
Okay, good. And I will as well. There's another part of this chapter that's woven through it that's in a certain way yet more hidden, but and yet more obvious to us in many ways, to some of us as we talk about it. But it's appropriate for this particular chapter that we bring up the topic. And we've talked about this whole idea, I've introduced it a couple of times, this idea of thought for food. And we've talked about, you know, potatoes and carrots and whatnot. But there's another concept of food, right? And we've talked about the idea that food, like we know the idea that, you know, impressions are food and so on. And really being in the invocational space is a form of food that feeds our higher self. But I wanted to formalize that discussion and take it to another level and get more in depth about it. And I've asked Silverdale to help me with that. And is that something that you think you can introduce in the next 5 or 10 minutes, Silverdale?
Dave, I think I can do it in 3 minutes.
Okay.
I want everybody to know I'm about to take us in an entirely different direction than the one we have been going in. So Gurdjieff's idea is that the universe is set up in accordance with reciprocal feeding and maintenance, the food chain, and that it functions in accordance with the law of 3 and the law of 7. So our essential self, which is the life force within us, feeds our human biological machine and our personality, and so everything we think and see and do is nothing more than the excretions of the life force that our physical body is eating and which we are manifesting. And if you'll, the reading assignment for this next week will be the beginning of chapter 9, activating the astral body, where what I'm about to say is more or less documented. My question is this: are all of these food references to be taken literally about individual foodstuffs, or are they figurative and metaphorical, in which case what we're really talking about are the manifestations of the human biological machine and all the habits and eccentricities of our historical personality? Can all of those be equated to different types of foodstuff items, in which case what we really want to do is cook the vegetable nature of our essential self in order to return and feed, I'm sorry, of our the vegetable nature of our human biological machine,
right,
in order to feed our essential self and grow the presence of our essential self. So how we live our life from moment to moment, like cooking and eating from moment to moment, to convert the negative force of our historical personality back to our essential self. That's the introduction to the idea. 3 minutes.
And when we talk about the idea of feeding on the historical personality, are we talking about, in a sense, gobbling up the tendencies of sleep as they particularly might manifest in me or you or whatever?
That's very good, Dave. And, you know, just to read the summary statement of Chapter 9, Activating the Astral Body, if the organic, so we think of organic vegetables, if the organic biological like the earth machine and its moving central manifestations can be made passive, higher substances can be driven upward by the resulting negative force, and the astral body can be automatically activated. Well, that's what we've been talking about for the last several weeks in terms of the literal food we eat. Perhaps it also applies to our manifestations. Can we prepare and eat our manifestations?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what I want to do, we'll weave Chapter 9 back into Chapter 13 so we can see if we can do that. So how do we then eat our manifestations in such a way that they become proper food for the care and handling of our essential selves? So how to do that is what I want to explore together as a group next week. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, pretty much that, David, has been all the books, like the chapters, like the Vidutta, the chronic, all the manifestation of the machine. And the sacrifices and the joy of sacrifices and pacifying the personality. All that is the mm-hmm. the food for the essential self.
Yeah, but I want to bring it now in a different context. So yes, we did look at it then, but now I want to look at it specifically about holding those two issues in our mind at the same time, Simon, that we're looking at the manifestations of our historical personality and holding the essential self alive at the same time and seeing how one frees the other. Okay? And Dan, you had a comment.
Jesus says at some point, it's not what goes into a man that defiles him, but what comes out of him.
So we then, to take it a step further in the analogy, what meal am I presenting to my fellow as I walk through the day, right? What meal do I serve mm-hmm. in that manner? So we've talked, and I think it is important to talk about the actual physical concept and interaction with the food as actual food, as physical food that we're going to go eat. But now we're going to look at it also in the context of Chapter 9 and some of the work that we did in Joy of Sacrifice and, of course, HBM.
Mm-hmm. Okay? All right.
I think, David, Mark wants you to say again what is what we want to explore next week.
So next week we're going to take the concept of thought for food into the idea of the manifestations of the sleeping machine and how I can eat those manifestations in such a way that they become sustenance specifically for the essential self.
Well,
a big order,
David.
Big topic.
Maybe somebody wants to write that
yes,
down.
Yes, Susan?
Yeah, I know. I didn't write it down, though. Maybe somebody besides me wants to write it down.
I didn't hear you.
I'm wondering if there's a way to get a hold of the diet talk of the month, Ivan.
Yeah, those are on talkofthemonth.com you can just download.
Okay, perfect.
You can buy the digital talks. I think they're only $5, $3 or $5. We made them cheaper as
okay.
downloads.
Okay.
Great.
And, you know, there's something also that idea from Chapter 9, and I think partially what George is talking about, is also there's an older talk of EJ's that's very explicit about that called reversing the pump.
Yeah.
You know, where
he's
using that analogy of we're always taking higher vibrations and higher energy and turning it into excrement, basically, and the idea is to reverse the pump. Is to be
and
able
that's
to
one of the talks
take
among.
The lower. I don't think it is. I think it's just a
that.
I don't think it was transcribed. I think you have to listen to it. It's a fairly long talk, like at least two, like maybe two CDs or something.
Okay.
But, you know, the idea is to reverse the pump and send the energy upward, which is the principle of prayer absolute.
Right.
And the popcorn exercise is reversing head brain and tail brain.
Exactly right.
Yeah, that's why where the process that's described here is the organic biological machine and its moving central manifestations can be made passive. So there's reversals of direction involved here.
Okay. Well, that's it for tonight. And I appreciate everybody's comments. And I look forward to, if you want to post on the website, particularly if you're working with this material on your own, it'll help you to post something like that on the website. There's some wonderful comments that have been made in the last few days that are really interesting there. Thank you, Ivan, for some of those.
Yeah.
So we'll call it a night. And look forward to seeing you next week when we'll continue our studies of The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. Good night.
Thank you.